the Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye.
The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2015-1127, Darlene Burnham versus the Cleveland Clinic et al. For the appellant, Mr. Perry.
May I begin?
Yes.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Brett Perry, and I represent the appellant, the Cleveland Clinic Foundation, in this appeal. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right.
The case before the court provides the unique opportunity to provide clarity and restore essentially 20 years of precedent with regard to appeals that are brought under Revised Code 2505.02b4. The decision in Chin, which is primarily the issue we're here before today, has unfortunately been misconstrued by many lower courts in the short time that has been published, despite the fact that this court specifically stated that a new rule was not to be adopted. And because of this misconstruing of the decision in Chin, we have essentially had an upheaval of, as I mentioned, 20 years of precedent with regard to the disclosure of privileged materials. Which was foreshadowed by the dissent in the Chin decision. Since the Chin decision, we've had varying lower court interpretations and disparate treatment for litigants. The First District in Walker v. Taco Bell has dismissed an appeal when a disclosure of privileged material was ordered. The Eighth District in Burnham, which we're here for today, dismissed an appeal when the undeniable facts before the court established that it was in fact a privileged document subject to attorney-client privilege. Thereafter, the Howell decision in the 8th District dismissed it. As opposed, we have the 5th District, which is a construed Chin and permitted appeal in both Lavin and McVeigh with regard to privileged documentation with the simple statement that the bell cannot be unrung.
Counsel, what if we interpret Smith v. Chin as just saying that the parties in that case, or the party in that case who wanted the documents to be protected, simply haven't made a showing? How can you distinguish this case?
Well, that's exactly the
Smith v. Chin.
And thank you, Your Honor. That's exactly the point that I think the appellants and the amici in this case mentioned, is that the dismissal was not because the document was not privileged. It was dismissed because this court ordered the litigants to brief that issue, and they failed to do so, resulting in a dismissal. In this case, unlike the case in Chin, the Cleveland Clinic made an affirmative production of an affidavit establishing the protected nature of the Sears report. Precedent from the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, the federal court, establishing that the exact same type of report involving the exact client was protected by attorney-client privilege. And the fact that it was produced in anticipation of litigation, that alone, I think, would go above and beyond the burden of establishing the privileged nature. And again, once the document was ordered to be disclosed, you can't unring the bell, you can't put the proverbial genie back in the bottle.
After the slip and fall, sure, how much time elapsed before the incident report was prepared?
It's several weeks, Your Honor. The risk management department is notified. They go out and do the interviews of the staff members that were involved.
Was counsel involved in the preparation of the incident report?
In-house counsel is involved in the preparation and review of the incident report, and then if litigation then subsequently ensues beyond the investigation stage, it's turned over to outside counsel, such as myself.
You indicated that you thought Smith versus Chin needs to be clarified. What clarification needs to be promulgated?
I think we need a clarification that the appellant or the party that is asserting the privilege does not need to make an affirmative affirmative showing of prejudice should the documents be disclosed. I think Burnham and Howell are essentially creating a new rule that requires not only that the party establish that the documents are truly privileged, and I'm not really sure what truly privileged means. A document is either privileged or it's not. But then on top of that, they have to show that they would somehow be privileged or damaged or prejudiced by the disclosure of those documents. And I submit to this court, the mere disclosure of those documents is the prejudice. In the Chin decision.
Go ahead.
In the Chin decision, it was a work product issue with regard to some surveillance of the...
That was surveillance of an individual who allegedly was playing golf while injured.
Right. And in that case...
And that didn't raise a question of whether or not there was work product involved.
Well,
I'm seeing in this case is, we have an incident report on the date, the time, the location, and the witnesses who observed an alleged slip and fall.
I agree.
What's privileged about that?
The witnesses are not privileged, which was disclosed during the course of discovery. Depositions of those witnesses to ascertain what their knowledge of the facts could be conducted. The actual report, though, and attorney work product, as well as the attorney-client privilege that went into creating that report as part of the risk management, that is the privileged nature. The facts surrounding it through depositions of those witnesses, the clinic never objected to those depositions going forward to ascertain that information.
So the names of the witnesses were disclosed?
Were disclosed in discovery.
So was the report produced in a redacted form? Is that what we're talking about?
It was produced to the court for an in-camera inspection. The court reviewed it via in-camera and ordered it produced, Your Honor.
Was there a determination by the court that it was or was not privileged?
We argued that it was privileged in nature, and the court denied our argument.
So going forward, how could we write a rule that would say any document that we've revealed is privileged, and so we don't want it disclosed?
I'm not sure that...
How do we prevent all discovery from getting locked up in a quote-unquote privileged category?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think a new rule needs to be written. We have 20 years of precedent in Ohio, which this has been the law of the state. We haven't had a flood of appeals arguing privileged materials. There's
Well, then how does a video of a claimant playing golf who alleged to be, I'm not recalling the fact, disabled, change 20 years of law?
Well,
it seems to me our decision is fairly clear on that subject.
I agree it was clear. The unfortunate fact is that the lower courts have misconstrued your decision.
Well, what are they misconstruing?
That one, there must be an affirmative establishment that the document is privileged, but then secondly, that the damage cannot be undone on appeal after the case has been resolved.
You're looking at paragraph 8 of the Chen decision, where the language is an appellant must affirmatively establish that an immediate appeal is necessary to afford the remedy. And then later on in paragraph 9, although it says we do not adopt a new rule, it says an order compelling disclosure that would truly render a post-judgment appeal meaningless may be considered an immediate appeal, with the word truly in italics. So there are courts now that are taking the position that Chen said there must be an affirmative showing of prejudice before an order that was granted on privileged material can be even reviewed, right?
And as this court is aware, yes, Your Honor, and as this court is aware, privilege is either established by statute or common law. It's not like there's a new avenue of discovery that is being asserted to be under privilege. Attorney-client privilege, work product, peer review statutes, quality assurance protections, perhaps some trade secrets that are protected by statutory. There are limited areas that privilege applies. So a concern of this, a floodgate of new litigation, because everything would be cloaked in the veil of privilege, it still doesn't prevent the appellate court from dismissing those cases that don't fall under one of the defined areas of privilege.
And this didn't shift the burden, or should not have shifted the burden, to the holder of the records to go with that classification of truly. That would truly render a judgment. The burden is still on whomever wants to receive those documents.
Yes, and at the trial court level, the holder of the privilege still needs to establish that is in fact privileged.
It's a privilege.
It's a privilege.
Right.
I think the appellate courts, though, especially the 8th District, has gone a step further, especially in our decision, the Burnham decision, that we did not set forth any specific evidence of how we would be prejudiced. We cited to 12 different cases from 12 different districts holding that privileged documentation. Once it is disclosed, that is the prejudice.
But in the Chen case, Dr. Chen didn't meet his burden of showing why this video of him playing golf was privileged.
I have no answer for why this court specifically ordered the appellant to brief that issue, and they did not brief it, and this court dismissed it on that issue.
In looking at the briefs, the cases that the parties are relying upon, the dissent listed in the dissent in Chen went through all of the previous cases that said you need not have a special showing of prejudice. In the briefs, however, there's a statement that after the Chen case, there are certain appellate courts that have determined that the parties have indeed provided the evidence. What type of evidence were those courts looking at?
Well, for instance, in the 5th District, in the Lavin and the McVeigh cases, they simply made a one-line statement that the bell cannot be unrung. That was sufficient in following the 20 years of precedent in the 12 different cases in 12 different districts, that was sufficient to show that once the bell had been unrung, you can't undo the prejudice.
And that's how that court interpreted Chen.
Right, very straightforward. I think the McVeigh decision or the Lavin decision out of the 5th District is right on point and provides a simple, distinct statement that should be made. And as this court's aware, this court has entertained issues dealing with privilege on multiple occasions without having to go through the further steps of establishing all the prerequisite requirements.
This isn't a privilege case. This is about whether or not there's a final appealable order, isn't it? This is a finality case.
Well, to get to the finality issue, though, we have to first show that there's a privileged document, which would then have 2505.02 apply.
If we agree with you, what do we write in this case?
I think we need to clarify that the Smith decision does not set forth a new rule. There's no new burden on the holder of the privilege to entitle them to the right to appeal. Unfortunately, Justice O'Donnell, the 8th District provided Burnham my client the opportunity to brief the issue. We cited to the dissent saying what would be necessary to get to the right to appeal, and they dismissed the case. In the Howe case, they never even provided the appellants the opportunity to brief the issue. They unilaterally raised it.
Aren't you asking us, therefore, to overrule Smith versus Chen? Because I'm looking at it. I'm looking at a sentence that I think kind of gets to the unrung bell. I understand the unrung bell concept.
Absolutely.
Once it's ringing, everybody heard it. We can't take it away. But we said this burden falls on the party who knocks on the courthouse doors asking for interlocutory relief. So where in this case did your client demonstrate this is a bell that just can't be rung, it can't be done?
Well, first we briefed the issue. We provided an unrefuted affidavit setting forth the way and mechanism and manner that this incident report was created. We relied on further controlling case law from the federal court interpreting this exact same type of document as providing a right to an immediate appeal. I think my client went above and beyond what was necessary to get through the door that they were knocking on at the 8th District. It's sad that we took those affirmative steps when the 5th District and the 10th District recently have merely only stated that a simple statement.
But you seem to be saying that an incident report that's formulated by the employees of an institution to safeguard everyone who's there, if it's reviewed by a lawyer, well, that's it, the doors are closed.
In this specific case, that is exactly what I'm saying, Your Honor, and that's why I think that the trial court makes that determination initially, which then permits the appellate review before it's disclosed. We were denied the opportunity to even have that appellate review. And once that document is disclosed, we can never take it back.
So that's why I'm saying this is a finality issue. You simply want the right to appeal from the determination to disclose.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And you think that was foreclosed in Chen?
I think it's been foreclosed in, well, it's the way it's been interpreted
yes.
by the lower courts.
You think
it's
Chen
been
doesn't
foreclosed.
Do it, but courts think that Chen
right.
did it.
Think that it has.
We could rely upon paragraph 9, the first clause in that first sentence. This ruling does not adopt a new rule.
I
if we were to explain that that's what we were doing in the majority in Chen, then the cases cited in the dissent, for example, are still good law, and that's the law that we would continue to follow in the future.
Exactly, and I think the difficulty with litigants before the appellate courts are they're attempting to cite to the precedent that this court has set forth, 12 different districts have set forth, saying that merely a statement that you can't unring the bell, that you can't put the genie back in the bottle, that once this is disclosed, you could never go back in time.
So Justice Kennedy's prescient dissent is coming true around Ohio, is what you're suggesting to us.
I believe so, Your Honor. And the difficult part is that at the trial level, knowing that maybe the right to appeal could be foreclosed, that these documents, if ordered disclosed, could somehow have undue leverage on which direction the case goes, if settlement's going to be pursued. No one has a crystal ball here or at the trial level. A court may say that these documents are discoverable, however, they're not admissible. Litigants shouldn't be forced to anticipate what might happen at trial when charting their course.
Which privilege exactly is it that you're asserting?
Attorney-client privilege,
okay.
Specifically with this one, with a dovetail with the risk management provision as well, because it's generated via risk management.
Which is it?
Attorney-client.
All right. And you indicated that in response to Justice O'Donnell's questions early on, that this whole report was formulated at the request of the hospital attorney?
In-house counsel. Actually, we were supported with an affidavit from the chief legal officer from the Cleveland Clinic, chief litigation officer, Matthew Donnelly.
Saying what?
That this is created as part of their policies and procedure with respect to risk management and anticipation of litigation.
But I thought when you were describing it, what you really said is counsel reviewed it after other people prepared this thing.
Well, it gets to counsel for ultimate review as part of the investigation. It's not unusual.
So counsel wasn't involved until it's got a ribbon around it.
Well, as the Sixth Circuit in the Cleveland Clinic versus Innovative Products, it specifically states that an employer can obtain statements from their employee in anticipation of litigation and production to the attorney, and it's still protected by the attorney-client privilege.
Are all these incident reports classified under attorney-client privilege?
Well, it depends, Your Honors. Those reports that are made with respect to medical care and treatment, for instance, would fall under perhaps quality assurance privilege, peer review privilege, as well as the statutory risk management privilege as well.
Well, let's look at this one was a slip and fall, correct? Okay, so are all incident reports, I imagine every time someone injures themselves on Cleveland Clinic property, inside or out, you're going to do an incident report?
It depends on if notice
you're notified,
is provided. Yes.
Of course, if you know of it. Are under all circumstances, are incident reports ordered by the legal counsel, is there a standing order that from your litigation department that all incident reports are to be prepared and submitted to legal counsel?
And the affidavit actually sets forth that there's not only a policy in place that the secondly, it's submitted to risk management as well as the in-house legal team.
Okay, and then all of them then are considered privilege by the Cleveland Clinic because of the policy that you have in place and the following of that policy by the staff at the clinic?
The document is privileged, yes, Your Honor, and that's the distinction I want to make here, is that we're not foreclosing discovery of the individuals.
No, would release the names of the witnesses, whoever may have attended on the spot, that sort of stuff. And then opposing counsel or counsel for the plaintiff can go and interview those people.
Or depose them, exactly.
Okay.
Would you say that in the retail context, incident reports at Dillard's or Kroger's are also privileged documents?
I would submit.
Lots of people slip and fall in grocery stores.
If they have policies in place, they have a litigation team on site, they have an in-house team, they have a set procedure with respect to risk management, it would arguably fall under that purview. In this case, I think the distinction that needs to be made here is that the clinic made an affirmative showing via affidavit saying, unrebutted, that this falls under and complies with the Sixth Circuit holding in the Cleveland versus Innovative Products.
Did the trial court, Judge Clancy, make a determination that this is privileged
ordered it produced, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
You use your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just ask that this court review and reverse the decision of the 8th District in Chen.
Thank you. Mr. Powell.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Alexander Powell, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Darlene Burnham. And I'm here to urge this court to not disturb its recent holding in Smith versus Chen. Smith versus Chen came out a little over a year ago. And I'm here to urge the court to affirm the 8th District Court of Appeals' dismissal of this appeal in Burnham versus Cleveland Clinic. This court's holding in Smith v. Chen clarified and reminded the appellate courts that only those cases which truly require an immediate appeal should be permitted to be appealed to the court.
Why is this incident report not a privileged document?
Because the incident report was created, it's a simple slip and fall incident report that was created at the time that Ms. Burnham fell. It was designed to gather the facts of and the statement of Ms. Burnham as to what happened. Now, I haven't seen the incident report. I don't know whether my client's statement is in that incident report. I'm assuming that it is, that she said, this is what happened. I slipped and fell on this water. So the Civil Rule 26B also states that a party may receive their own statement without good cause shown. This incident report, it's designed to gather information to reveal the true facts of the case.
Well, for whose benefit?
Well,
it's ordered by the Cleveland Clinic through its litigation counsel, and it's a standing policy, and I would presume their security or their risk people, spring into action when somebody's been injured on the premise and try to get the names of the witnesses, the condition of the, if they're able to talk, the injured party, et cetera. And that is done in anticipation of a risk assessment and litigation.
The issue in this case is we don't even know, the Cleveland Clinic has refused to release the names of the people that created the incident report. We don't know whether the incident report was done by the janitor that we're alleging caused the dangerous condition, the nurses that responded, whether it was legal counsel or a security guard. We don't know and
why does that matter?
Oh, because I think it matters, because if it's a person that's just documenting, hey, this is what I saw, this is what Ms. Burnham said happened, I think then that's more of a document which should be released, because it documents the facts of the case. It's not a communication to the attorney, to the Cleveland Clinic's
Isn't
counsel.
Isn't that the starting point, though, for a risk assessment and the beginning origins of litigation?
Yes, Your Honor, but the issue in this is the attorney-client privilege. The attorney-client privilege is a communication between a client and their attorney to encourage frank communication, and that's why it should be protected, because it's a very confidential and serious relationship. If we're just here to gather the facts of a slip and fall and to take a statement from the person that slipped and fell, I think that's a little different than an actual communication between the attorney and their own client.
Mr. Powell, it seems to me you're arguing whether or not the document is privileged. But the proposition of law before our court is whether or not the order to produce is a final appealable order. So while the two issues are related, the question of whether the document is privileged doesn't seem to be before the court.
Your Honor, I believe that in a sense that that has to be analyzed in some respect in order to determine whether prong B of 2505.02B4 is satisfied.
All right. I asked Mr. Perry the very question whether or not the trial court had made that determination, and he said the trial court did not determine it is privileged. It simply ordered it disclosed.
Yeah, I believe that the trial court made a decision that the Cleveland Clinic is to respond to interrogatories and is to produce the incident report, which the trial court reviewed in camera.
Do you think that an order to produce a privileged document is a final appealable order?
An order to produce a document that is actually privileged, then yes.
In our opinion, now we have actually privilege. The question is, hypothetically, in a situation where an order to produce a privileged document has been made, is that a final appealable order?
It's a final appealable order if the party who's appealing it can establish that they have no meaningful remedy at the end of the case.
What meaningful remedy would there be if it was disclosed?
Well, the meaningful remedy at the end of the case would be that the case could be retried if they are not victorious. If the appealing party is not victorious, the case could be retried without the information that was gathered on the incident report.
But isn't the prejudice the release of the privileged information? Isn't that what we're talking about?
The Cleveland Clinic is asserting that is the prejudice, is the release of the actual privilege.
And that's the inherent prejudice, isn't it, what we're talking about? I want to know what you think Chen establishes. What would be, in your view, an example of actual prejudice that was shown that would allow for a final appealable order?
I think an example of actual prejudice would be if a document releases trade secret information or something that can financially harm an appellant.
But what about privilege? We're talking privilege here, not trade secret information.
Well, yeah. Well, a communication that an attorney has with its client, that attorney-client privilege, if that is released, I'm sorry, I'm freezing up here with your question. Could you ask your question one more time? I'm sorry.
I'm saying that if you interpret Chen as now requiring a showing of actual prejudice,
okay,
and that's what I think your briefs have said,
mm-hmm,
what is the type of evidence that would need to be presented to show actual prejudice?
I think it needs to be shown that the document was actually created to be a communication between attorney and client.
Counsel, help us understand what it was that is critical to your case and to evaluating your case that you were not able to receive from the Cleveland Clinic. The appellate court says you asked, they threw down all kinds of privileges, and you asked the court to get you assistance in your discovery, and at some point they told you the witnesses, the people who actually observed this?
The Cleveland Clinic released the names of the persons who responded and treated the plaintiff after her slip and fall. A big issue in this case, which was brought up in my brief, is that the janitorial employee, which was Ms. Burnham's claim, was negligent. The Cleveland Clinic has been unable to produce her for deposition. The Cleveland Clinic has made the statement that they are unable to find her and unable to locate her, and she has not been available for deposition. That's why.
So the key witness, in terms of how whatever was on the floor got there,
absolutely,
or didn't get cleaned up.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
They tell you. They don't. Do they tell you they don't know what it is? Did they disclose a name?
They disclosed the name after I filed our motion to compel, and
so they didn't even want to disclose the name.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what about did you ask for copies of any statements or reports of statements made by your client to any employee?
Yes, Your Honor. In the same motion to compel in which the trial court ruled upon, I requested any incident reports and statements made by Ms. Burnham. And that came with an objection by Cleveland Clinic.
And did you get that?
No, Your Honor.
So what the critical piece of evidence that you're missing is what your client said to employees of the Cleveland Clinic.
That's correct, Your Honor. What my
and you, that's critical to know. Did she say something that just totally decimates her case?
Absolutely, Your Honor. All we're trying to gather is the true information that happened at the scene, and the janitorial employee, Ms. Tahisha Hill, who the Cleveland Clinic has been unable to provide for deposition. I think we have the right to know what she said happened.
What we're trying to find out, though, from the perspective of the Court of Appeals, is this a final appealable order or is it not? And here the court has said we're granting disclosure, and the parties arguing it's privileged information. So, you know, I think before Chen, that was sufficient because the appellant was saying, we are being ordered to disclose privileged information. That's the prejudice to us.
Correct. The thing about Smith versus Chen is that it highlights that the appellant must affirmatively establish that they need an appeal immediately, that the information that's being released is so important, it's so crucial that we need to appeal it right at this moment. And in this case, I think what sets it aside is this is just an incident report of a slip and fall. Whether it happens at a grocery store, at a bowling alley, an incident report is not a document which we submit, you know, that they have not affirmatively established that this incident report is so protected that, you know, they require an immediate appeal.
If we determine that this is a final appealable order, And we remand the matter to the Court of Appeal, can the Court of Appeals review whether or not it is or isn't privileged, or can it be remanded to the court for determination on whether it's privileged?
I think that if this court finds that it was a final appealable order, then the 8th District Court of Appeals can then make the determination as to whether the document itself is privileged, Your Honor.
So now we have the separation between the finality order and the privilege issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the privilege really isn't before us at the moment.
That issue isn't totally before the court, but as Mr. Perry argued, I think it has to be considered in making the determination as to whether you have a true, meaningful remedy at the end of the case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, why won't you disclose, why should you not be compelled to disclose whatever statements his client made to your employees?
Your Honor, I'm not saying that, one.
Is that privileged?
No, I don't believe there are any statements other than the incident report, first of all. Secondly, there was...
But if there were statements made, that would not be privileged. You'd need to disclose that, wouldn't you?
Under Civil Rule 26, if the proper measures are taken, I believe there are instances where statements can be discoverable. Yes, Your Honor.
Even if they're contained in the incident report.
Now, I would believe, because the incident report would be a separate document created, and depending on how it is created, is it being created by counsel? Is it counsel doing the investigation?
Well, where would the statements of an injured party be contained if not in an incident report?
Oftentimes, Your Honor, injured individuals will fill out a separate statement. if an investigation has not ensued, say they fell in a parking lot and the security guard was there, they might write down a statement and provide it to a security guard, something along those lines.
And that doesn't trigger an incident report?
It may or may not, depending on if the protocol is triggered at that point in time.
You want the incident report to be an umbrella that protects all of the investigation as attorney-client privilege?
No, Your Honor, and the distinction needs to be made is it's the incident report that is privileged. We are not arguing that the discovery of the individuals that responded. Mr. Paul is aware that his client, the janitor, and his client's sister were the only individuals present for this fall. Ms. Hill was a former employee. She left the employment. Her address was provided. Attempts to subpoena her to compel her to appear for deposition were made. She's simply not available.
But any statements in investigation, you're saying anything that's included in the incident report that's substantive, you would protect as attorney-client?
Exactly. And it's not only that I think this court needs to be clear that the appellee is essentially asking for this court to further strengthen Smith v. Chen and to make a delineation between truly privileged, absolutely privileged, privileged with prejudice, and to the point of
you have to have all those different adjectives to privilege.
No, that is my point. A document is privileged by its very nature. It doesn't need to be truly privileged or absolutely privileged. And there's statutorily defined privileges. There's common law privileges that this court is
well aware
of.
So the only thing that if we send this back, the trial court you would want the trial court to put on the record why they would release this document, why it's taken, in the mind of the trial judge, why it's taken out of the category of privilege. And then you'd want to be able to appeal that to the appellate court, and they would then make a decision upon review of the document. Is that all you're asking for here?
Exactly, which is what we've done for 20 years in Ohio.
And all you need to do is say it's privileged and nothing else.
As long as I think there needs to be a further showing. It has to fall under one of the categorically defined statutory or common law privileges.
But that's for the trial court to take
a look
at.
That's for the trial court to make the decision.
But you did provide that to the trial court. And the trial court, I guess you find yourself in this position because the trial court didn't give any rationale, anything other than you are to release this document to the plaintiff.
That's correct.
Did you petition the trial court to reconsider or explain further?
No, because the denial or the order to compel the production in our mind warranted the appeal under the longstanding precedent. But before I end, one of the issues raised was what do we do after the trial? They could appeal. That raises a whole nother, it opens up a whole nother can of worms. Is it harmless error to produce the privileged document? Did it materially harm the right to a fair trial? Did it rise to the level of undue prejudice as to warrant a new trial? We're really going down a slippery slope with everything. If you have to raise this different levels and burdens for a privilege before you get that right to appeal. The whole purpose of 2505.02 was to give the right to appeal under those defined reasons that are listed in addition to privileged materials, which is clearly
Would you
stated.
Say that privilege, the issue of privilege has inherent prejudice to begin with?
It's a bedrock principle.
All right.
It's a bedrock
Thank
principle
you.
That is vital.
Thank you,
Thanks,
counsel.
Your Honor.
We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Thank you, gentlemen.